Oh, are you recording me? I didn't know these were recorded. All right. We are going to get into the golden calf story. This is a story that a lot has kids hear from when they're little, right? This is kind of that whole section. We went over the Ten Commandments. Now we're getting to the golden calf story. And there's a lot of the kids' stories are oftentimes misrepresented. This isn't what you grow up, you hear. It's Moses goes up on the mountain to get the Ten Commandments. He comes back down, and the people are worshiping a golden calf. Right? That's about what we get out of that story. And that's bad. That's a no-no. Moses gets angry. God gets angry. Moses throws the tablets, breaks the tablets on the golden calf. And then, weird part, makes everybody drink it, right? Melts it down and makes them drink it. So there's the totality. There is a whole lot going on behind the scenes in this story. So I'm just going to go ahead and start to read it. But it's going to get probably more uncomfortable for us than we would like. But that's what we're here for, I guess, is to be uncomfortable and pushed a little bit. So this is Exodus chapter 32. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said to him, "Up, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." So Aaron said to them, "Take off the rings of gold that are in your ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people took off the rings of gold that were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool and made a golden calf. And they said, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation, "Tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord." And they rose up early the next day, and they offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go down, for your people, whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way that I commanded them. They have made for themselves a golden calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, 'These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt.'" And the Lord said to Moses, "I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, in order that I may make a great nation out of you." But Moses implored the Lord his God and said, "O Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people, whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians say, 'With evil intent did he bring them out, to kill them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth?' Turn from your burning anger and relent from this disaster against your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your own self and said to them, 'I will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven, and all this land that I have promised I will give to your offspring, and they shall inherit it forever.' And the Lord relented from the disaster that he had spoken of bringing on his people." So I want to go over a couple things. We need to flash back to the stories before. What did the Egyptians give to the Israelites? when they were leaving. It said they found favor in the people in Egypt's eyes, and they gave them all their gold, all their jewelry, and that was a representation. Right? That's God taking care of his people. Before they leave, he didn't leave them empty-handed. He gave them jewelry, gold, all this stuff. And that is what they turn into this idol. Ten Commandments. God asked the people to come up to the mountain, right? He asked the people to come up to the mountain so that they could hear him. So they hear all this being said, and 40 days later, and again, you kind of have to play both sides. You have to look at the people, and man, Moses has been gone for a long time, right? 40 days is not just a short period of time, but Moses has been gone for a while, and they start to get a little bit antsy. And I want to say two things. First, if we're going to go into the pedigree of what's to come, Aaron's becomes the priest's lineage, right? Through this guy who's creating for the people a golden altar. Second thing, and I do want to say, in Hebrew, there's some differences. I know I say this a lot, and it's briefly, in the ESV, it's briefly hit on. And this is something that I'm going to say, and y'all can dig into. I think it's more where the Bible's pushing us to if you read it for how it was written back then, and not necessarily take a looser translation. We're going to go into chapter 32, but I want to point out in verse 5. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord," capital L, right? When we see the golden calf story, and I'm reading out of the ESV, and I would like to read out of the podcast I listened to. The guy is fluent in Hebrew and has transliterated the whole Hebrew Bible and has written it more to our English understanding, but I know that would throw quite a bit off for what we're doing, and what we read and what y'all are reading. But I do want to say, Lord, capital L, who is Aaron making this altar and this idol of? God. Not gods or other gods. The God that brought you out of Egypt. It's like, Moses is taking a little while. I'm not sure about that. They want something physical. Aaron's going to make this idol of God. Who? They're going to take what they think worship should be. They're going to take this, make it their own, outside of God's wishes, because we just had these commandments of no idols, don't make anything out of gold, and don't carry or take up the Lord's name in vain. And what do? They take the Lord's name and they put it on a golden calf. Oh, they take this ideology that is around the world, right? Because this is a common thing. People make idols. They have this ideology that they see around the world, and that people can go to an altar and make sacrifices, and they have this image of their supposed God with the head of a donkey and all. I mean, there's tons of crazy stuff, right? And they take what's in the world, what the world sees as good, and they bring it into their God. They make a golden image of their God. Whoa. Now see, you can take that one of two ways. You can take that as, well, at least they're trying to worship Yahweh, right? So it's like, well, they're taking their own ideas and trying to merge it in. And so that's not quite as bad as worshiping other gods, right? It's worse. It's worse. You're taking what Satan's doing over here and you're melding it with what God has intended for us. It's worse. They're taking up the name of the Lord and they're destroying it, because if we're to make and again, it's wrong, but if we take the I am, we just went over the I am statements a few weeks ago, right? We take the I am, something that's grander than you can even put into words, and you make an image of a golden calf. When these people have been told their whole lives that we're images of God, and they make it into an animal that we're supposed to have dominion over? You're going to bring God down to that? Let's take this and let's turn it into what we do. How often do we try to twist to make easier what God's telling us? How often do we try to change something in the church or justify a sinful way and put God's name to it? Pretty often. The big issues of today, right? Homosexuality. You probably all know a Christian that claims to be followers of God and has nothing wrong with it, right? You're doing the same thing. You're twisting what was meant to be, what was supposed to be created for a specific intent. You're twisting it and then you're attaching God's name to it. That should be scary. That should be incredibly scary. We do this on lots of different scales, right? Because we all don't like some of the discomforts that comes with telling the truth. You probably all have somebody in your head where you're like, man, this guy needs to know the truth, or this lady needs to know the truth, but that is not a fun conversation, and I don't want to lose friendship. Are we focusing on eternity or your next few years, right? What are we locked into? Those uncomfortable conversations were meant to be had. We see what in Jewish writings far past this. I was reading something today. This morning. And it was a Jewish scholar, not a Messianic Jew, but a Jewish scholar. And I think sometimes it's important to look at what the Jews' presumptions were prior, because you're talking about a people, God's chosen people, right? Even if they're the ones that missed it, and they missed the Messiah coming, you're talking about people who are very ingrained in the first five books of the Bible, at least, or the Old Testament, right? And several Jewish authors write this as the fall of Israel. This is Israel's fall. You have the fall of man, which is in the garden, and then this is the notated biggest fall of human afterwards. They say, the Jewish guy that I was listening to, and I'm going to paraphrase because I don't remember it word for word, but he says 1/24 of all punishment handed out by God is today is due to the golden calf. They look at that story with such discomfort, and they know what they did was wrong, and they look at the story and they're like, this is punishment. This is what is in comparison to the theme or big grand word would be original sin, right? You hear original sin around the Adam and Eve story. And this is what they're saying about the golden calf story. This is passed down in generations to come. There should be a seriousness with this story that we read. Not just reading that somebody worshipped a false god. No, they put a false god and put God's name on it. That should be a little bit spooky to us because we still do it. We still justify things that we see around. You're not here to justify. You're here to reflect. They take this, what God has given them, and a representation already of what God's done for them in the jewelry, in the gold, and we'll get to the tabernacle, but the same words that God uses, take the rings from your wives' ears and your sons and your daughters and make them into, there's certain instructions on what to make those into on the tabernacle, right? And we, this gift from God as they're exiting Egypt, and they mar it. They take this gift that's already a representation of what God has done for them, and they turn it into something and stick God's name on it. Oof. That is so beyond what you hear as a kid. And we need to look at that, because oftentimes you hear it today is, oh, well, at least they're trying, right? Oh, well, there's an element of that, right? But you can't ignore, right? If you're going to take steps in the right direction. I've always said God doesn't play hide the peanut. The issues that we typically argue over are either made up by us, or a certain group or a certain church or whatever, a certain people try to justify. There's not a whole lot of gray areas. We like to make gray areas, don't we? I'm a rule bender, sometimes breaker. I like gray areas, right? Because I can do something and be like, ah, well, I mean, it's kind of right on the line. And Brooks does the same thing. It's starting to drive me nuts, right? Boy, it does come back to get you, doesn't it? He'll do something. He's like, well, he'll be like, I want to spank you, but I'm trying to figure out how to make this where I'm in the right. And this is a lot harder than I ever thought it would be, right? But that's what we do. That's what this story is about, is the justification, the taking. And we can get deeper. I'm going to go ahead because I know that's a very large statement just to throw out there, and I'm going to open up to comments and questions, and then we'll see where we go from there and see how much further we can get. It's not that, and that's the, like, I genuinely think if you put yourself in the shoes of a lot of these stories, we'd probably be in the wrong on most of them, right? Why can I say that? Well, because we do that today still on a lot of these stories. And then we're talking, when we go into this, Aaron commands them to have a feast, right? That's a commanded thing by God, is feasts. And this isn't something that they're, like, the feast part isn't bad. We can say, this isn't bad, this isn't bad, this isn't bad. So we can see where they're coming from, right? And that there is at least a, even though it's twisted, there is a following of his commands. But they twisted it to make it more comfortable to them. And they did it in one of the worst ways imaginable. Right? They did it in a way that they're sticking God's name on something that is far lesser than who He is. They're putting God in a box. God doesn't get in a box, right? And not only are they putting Him in a box, they're putting Him in a box that's of creation that His reflections are supposed to have dominion over. And so it's easy to, if you go back and you're genuinely honest to yourself, it's easy to do this, right? We want to scold Aaron for this, right? Because you're like, you were acting as a mouthpiece of God just a few chapters ago. God sent you with Moses to do all this stuff, to take your people out of Israel, to do all these amazing things, and then the people start pushing on him, and you can only think to yourself, it's just human nature. I want to scold him, right? He's bad. He's supposed to be the leader. He's supposed to be, and when it came time to lead, he caved. But guys, they are so close. Lawyers get a bad rap. Car dealers get a bad rap. I kind of like lawyers to an extent, some of them. But oftentimes with the law, there's just these little things that you can pick on, right? They are so close to following through with what God's commanded them in previous chapters. Right? They're a couple steps away from it. They're not far off. They're 10 degrees in the wrong direction. They did it in the worst possible way, and for us sitting here today, we're like, okay, that's 180 degrees in the wrong direction, right? But think about it. They're doing what God has told them to do, but they're adding their own thing to it. Right? We can probably see that in our daily lives. So if we're honest with ourselves, we'd probably be in the crowd saying, hey, yeah, let's make a golden calf. Right? Let's take our interpretation and let's praise God through it, but that's just easier for me to wrap my head around. Right? We understand at this point that God's done great things. He called us up to the mountain, and we were fearful. So it's not that we don't recognize that God is real. We just walked through the waters. We just wandered through the desert. Quail and manna is falling from the sky. The mountain is, we had a fairly big storm last night, right? Lots of thunder. I don't know, it might have been different in a lot of houses, but our house was shaking for about 30, 45 minutes, right? And that was probably nothing to what Mount Sinai looks like right now. They're just watching a cloud envelop a mountain and thunder and lightning and fire and wow. So it's not that they don't realize that, hey, that's God up there. They just got so uncomfortable with the situation that they're like, hey, we're kind of just in this waiting cycle. Let's figure out what we should do and just go ahead and do it. And if you see, well, what's it about? Them. They want to feel better. They want to feel comfortable. They. Right? It's what can they do? What can I do? And that's, it's the whole pick yourself up by your bootstraps kind of mentality, right? It's not giving credit where credit's due. It's not understanding that God's in large and in charge of everything. And so if Moses hasn't come down from the mountain, what should you probably do? You should probably wait.
Not naive,
Yeah, I mean, look at the crossing of the Red Sea. Who do they go to? Moses. Did you bring us out here because there wasn't enough graves in Israel, right? When they get past the Red Sea and there's no water, who do they go to? Moses. Like, hey, dude, what's up? They're not going on their own and saying, hey, God, need some water. They're going to a guy. So, yes, the whole story from the Red Sea to getting water to man and quail to you just see the people keep coming back to Moses, right? They're not doing stuff on their own. They're not stepping aside and saying, hey, God, they want this one man, this one figure, right? And that's where we'll get into, I'm sure, don't know how long it'll take, but we'll get into the kings and the choosing of Saul and the choosing of, like, their whole, this whole story. They want a guy, right? Their kings is a golden calf story, and God warns the people about choosing a king. What do the people want? A king. It doesn't matter. Warn. Doesn't matter. I want a king. I want something tangible in front of me that just makes more sense to me. Everybody else has a king, right? Why can't we have a king, God? He's like, here I am. You go through the scriptures, and one of my favorite things is that when God addresses David, when God addresses Saul, when God addresses these kings, he says, I chose you to be prince of my people. There should be no question who the king is, right? Yep. I mean, there's I would probably fear for a lot of things if some of the people that are at Auto World were the decision makers, right? Not in a bad way towards them, not in a never made a decision, don't know, right? And so there's an element of the, really, wow, come on, man. There's an element of that, right? That when you get kicked off on your own and you gotta put your big boy pants on, it's a lot of unknowns, right? And when the guy who had his big boy pants on, Moses, right? He fled Israel and made a life of his own outside of what he had in his hands, right? This is a guy who's now the son of Pharaoh's daughter, and there's nobody else, right? There's not someone in line after Pharaoh. It's probably him. He's probably the next guy. Pharaoh doesn't have the son. So he leaves this promise of wealth and riches, and he's been making big boy decisions for a little while now. And so you lose that in a multitude of people. There's probably a little bit of a rocky sustenance behind that, right? But I also want us to see that his decisions were from God. It's not that Moses had it figured out. By now, Moses kind of figured out, okay, there's a lot more going on here, and if I just listen to what God says, it's going to pan out, right? He's been on this crazy journey of listening to what God says, and even when he doesn't want to, right? when he makes a bunch of excuses not to do what God's asking him to do. And he still does it. Kevin, you said there was a couple things. I guess I'll give you... It blows me away. I hope it blows y'all away. How accurate the Bible over thousands of years is to us today. Right? These same things that you watch people struggle through are a lot of times the struggles we're carrying out today. Yep. I mean, this is a book of human nature, and I mean, and who knows us better than the Creator, right? These are going to be issues till kingdom come, right? And I challenge y'all, whenever you're doing your own reading or ladies' class or whatever's coming, whatever you do on your own time, it's super easy to sit back. And Chloe, I appreciate you saying, I could see, right? Because that would be my first thing as well. At least they're trying to worship God, right? But I appreciate you putting yourself in those shoes and being like, hey, I can't. Because that's so important, right? It's easy for us just to say, oh, bad, 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 naughty, 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 and move on, right? This story is easy for us to read over and say, that was stupid, that was dumb, and move on. All right. We haven't changed much, and when we dig into what's really going on and what's this telling us about God, it's the same thing today, right? It's just digging into it, being honest with yourselves. And I'll say this really fast, but to go on your point, when through these stories it's talking about God being a jealous God. It's in this story, it was in a story we had a couple weeks ago, it was in the Ten Commandments, right? The word jealousy in Hebrew carries a lot more weight. And I know I talked about this, but this is a parental, like this word in Hebrew is used as a parental guidance type word. Like back then, this jealous was Watching your kids do stupid stuff over and over and over and desiring the best for you and knowing, hey, what I'm telling you is there's value. This is what you should be doing, and you're doing this. That's the word we're reading. And that's why in English sometimes we kind of... But it's important to get into their frame, because in Hebrew, words carry a lot of meaning. We're a very... Our words are very... Like, we like to have a word for everything, right? Their words carry a lot of weight. Like, some of their words require a sentence in English to figure out, right? But this is a parental struggle, a parental jealousy, a parental desire for them to be in a better place. And so thank you for bringing that back up, but I guess we're out of time now that everybody's filtering in. Thank y'all.